This show is part of the Pod Tyrant Network. For more podcasts, interviews, and content, visit podtyrant.com. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who's been doing the shadow test all day long, Adam Farmer.
I'm always concerned. I'm glad like no one has started to repeat numbers along with me.
You're happy with your results?
No. I'm so
ready?
Far.
Ready?
Okay.
168. Okay, we're good. We're good.
I was counting to three. I was gonna say 68, but you didn't give me the lead up time.
You said one, and if it was a predetermined sequence of numbers, you would have said 68.
True.
So,
true.
I think you're good.
I like that part of the episode. Not gonna lie.
It was creepy.
It was.
Yeah. But well, I mean, we actually don't have any news to talk about. Between the last episode and this episode, really nothing of significance has come out other than what we usually get, which is promo pics and a trailer for the next episode. So
right, and most of the stories that have been coming out have been speculation about what's in the vault and all this other stuff, and really, that's not a question anymore.
Or is it? That's something we can discuss, because I don't know if it's as clear cut as they'd like us to think.
I'm glad that you're bringing that up, because honestly, I was half tempted to post a question as soon as I watched the episode to double check if anybody else was wondering if it was still who they kind of pointed to.
Right. So we will talk about the pyramid at the end of the world, which is like the longest episode title that we've had in a while. We will talk about those promo pics and trailer. But we pretty much can just jump straight into our review of Extremis, because we don't have any news to talk about, and then we'll save the promo picks and trailer talk till after, because I think there would be some, you know, some speculation maybe based on those pictures and trailer that would make sense for us to save it to the end. So Extremis, we're just going to jump right in it. Written by Stephen Moffat, director Daniel Netheim, and it's story number 268. So the synopsis: the Vatican asks the 12th Doctor to investigate a mysterious book called the Veritas. All who read the Veritas immediately kill themselves. When a translation of the Veritas is leaked online, the Doctor must face up to the inevitable truth. It's kind of a misleading synopsis.
Yeah, it really is.
Because it didn't really leak online.
Yeah.
Did I miss that part?
Translator, priest... sent it,
and he emailed it to some people, but it wasn't like it went viral yet.
Yeah, it didn't go big. I mean we get to the end of the episode and somehow other individuals ended up with it.
Right, I guess that could be seen as leaked. Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, so this episode is one that we were both pretty excited about based on the previews and stuff, and I think it may have lived up to the hype.
Yeah, I'm definitely not disappointed at all by this episode. I am very pleased and somewhat frustratingly pleased, because it is our first episode since pilot that we go back to a Moffat episode. And this is the first episode since the pilot that it's like, dang, that was a good episode.
So are we learning that like it takes Moffat and then we're about to lose Moffat?
he's very artistically crafting this series to point to one thing in particular, and that is his awesomeness.
Or is he just taking all the good story ideas for himself?
That might be it too.
That'd be more that might be more the truth than anything else.
I mean, from the very get-go of this episode, it started out really strong in my opinion. The way that it opened, kind of the situation that it put us in, and then just progressing from there, the different story and the different elements, the different characters that appeared, the different things that happened, the different transitions. There was just throwing this out there, there isn't anything that immediately comes to mind that felt off.
And they started out strong right at the beginning, because you get this really cool voiceover. We don't really know who the character is that's talking, but we get this voiceover and he's talking about death. And at first you're kind of like, he's saying like death is an issue or death is a problem. And you're like, oh, you know, that's true. A lot of everybody dies and people die and that's a problem. But he was like, it's like the reverse, you know, trying to figure out how to kill people was a problem for this guy because he's in the business of killing people. And it starts out kind of with that creepy voiceover, but then you get this really cool view of this boat with the doctor standing on it and this epic, very scenic castle. I felt like I was about to watch an episode of Game of Thrones. How it started. It was like or Lord of the Rings or something, you know? Like, yeah, it didn't feel like a Doctor Who intro.
Yeah, it was very, again, like the way that they're shooting, the way that they shot Pilot, the way that they shot Smile, just kind of like those wide views of what's going on. It's interesting. It feels different when they take those approaches, and it looks really darn good, this series. Like, it looks incredible when they get that opportunity to give you more of the scenic views.
And I was actually looking at it with a critical eye because of watching things like Game of Thrones, who do such a great job on the visual effects. They, you know, they take these scenes where people are on horseback in front of a green screen and they turn it into, it really looks like a real epic world. And so when you watch something like Doctor Who, and they probably don't have as big of a budget for that type of stuff, and it's not the main focus like it would be in something like Game of Thrones, you know, I was kind of looking at this background, like almost looking for the lines or something to indicate that it's this green screen backdrop. But they did a really good job. Like, I could not necessarily pick out anything that made it look bad. It fit. It seemed like the Doctor was actually on a boat coming up to this epic castle.
Yeah, and even in moments where you might be able to focus on things that probably didn't look as polished as what we would see in other shows, they distract you with the story. They just distract you with the situation, which I have to say, even in the trailers that we got for this episode, the reveal of Missy coming onto the scene, I definitely didn't put her in this position that we find her in the episode, right? I viewed her as leading these soldiers with the weird spears and outfits, like she was going to be in charge of them, and what we got was exactly the opposite.
Yeah, and a bit of a misdirect even at the beginning with the Doctor, and is like, who is getting executed? You know, you have idea of this execution that's happening, and this guy is talking to the Doctor, and you're like, is the Doctor getting executed? And the guy apologizes for who the executioner is going to be. And then she walks out with all this confidence, and you're like, oh, the Doctor's getting executed. And then it turns out it's her. So I liked that too. It was a nice little misdirect at the beginning.
Yeah, I totally was in that moment, thought, oh, wow, this is a really interesting way to start out. Especially when the whole entire episode starts like a very long time ago. It's like, okay, what did we miss a very long time ago? And here we have the Doctor in this situation. He wasn't blind, though. So that definitely pointed again that it was a very long time ago and not current, but it still had me wondering, okay, what is going to happen here and how does it play into the rest of the story that we have? But then as soon as they make Missy kneel, or when he said, the prisoner will kneel, and they kind of just panned to both the Doctor and the Master, and it was like, oh, who really is it? And then Missy finally kneels.
Right.
Yeah, it played out really well, that very, very opening. And then when the vault came up, I think that's the one instance where it's like, okay, that could have looked less than polished, but you're so caught up in what's taking place between Missy and the Doctor that I really haven't paid much attention to what it looks like coming out of the water with all the water pouring off of it.
And they played around with the time a little bit. So we get this where it says a very long time ago. Is that what it said in kind of the title card thing that popped up?
Yep.
Okay, so a very long time ago. They don't specify when. We have no idea. They give us a couple hints as to where in time it lands. We know it's before the vault. You know, we know it's before he made his oath. So it's before everything we've seen in this season.
Before the vault, before the oath, but also before or after Duryllium.
Right, that was the other kind of indicator that it was after that. Now, it took me a second watch through to realize what that meant. Duryllium, I forgot that was the whole River Song stuff.
Yeah, and I... So there's still something that's like hanging out there that I'm very curious if it's going to come back into play, because Missy asks about the domestic bliss on Duryllium, and the doctor just like gives her the look and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, my condolences. But there's someone else that Missy would know of that she never mentioned, right? She would know of Clara. She would know who Clara was, and I'm waiting for her to mention Clara.
And the doctor to go who?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm waiting to find out how that's handled. Or is Missy just going to, like, never mention the past companion that she went toe-to-toe with so often?
Yeah, that is interesting. And we don't really know when she says my condolences. It's kind of like, what? Why? Why is she giving her condolences?
Yeah, I just assume because River's dead.
But the River didn't die with 12. She died with 10. So she was alive and well. I guess when he sends her off knowing that she's going to die, maybe?
Yeah, like the whole... I mean, after Duryllium comes silence in the library.
So it's kind of like, you know, he knew that when she left, she was going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's probably not a conversation to have right now, but now I'm trying to remember, did River know too? Did she go into her death knowing it was coming, or spoilers? Like, I can't remember.
I think she knew that it was coming to the end because her journal, right? She had run out of pages in her journal.
Okay.
And she knew that the man that gave her the journal, the doctor, would know how many pages she would need, yada, yada, yada. And then...
Okay, so condolences like make sense.
Yeah.
You know, he lost his true love, or his wife.
nice backstep there.
Although... He only gave her a look. It's not like he told Missy, like, oh yeah, you know, she died. He just looked at her and she's like, my condolences. So they're that close of friends that I guess she can kind of read from a look that something bad happened.
Yeah. That's another thing that struck me about like these interactions, because Missy's not being insane in these interactions. Like, their friendship was... You could see that there was a more of a friendship there as opposed to just this weird antagonistic relationship. And it was interesting just how Michelle played Missy. Because we're not used to seeing her kind of this more subdued, somewhat thoughtful, kind of on the brink of breaking down type of character.
Yeah, it's like she can pull out sanity when she needs it.
Right.
Just like the doctor can pull out humanity when he needs it.
Oh.
These Time Lords are very crafty people.
They are.
So she, you know, she starts to kind of beg for her life in a way, which is interesting to see. And the doctor is obviously affected by it. He, for whatever reason, across these different versions of the Master that we've seen in the modern series, as bad of things as these people do, he still has a soft spot in his heart for them. You know, he didn't, we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit here, but he ends up not killing her. He doesn't. He has the opportunity to execute her with a, you know, he has every right, I guess, to do it, you know, for whatever reason she's being executed, but he's there, you know, picked as the executioner. He's got the tool to do it right in front of him. He has every reason to want to kill Missy, to get her out of the way, you know, as far as a villain. That he constantly faces, but yet he still doesn't do it. Maybe with a little, you know, push from River in the journal and all that, you know, maybe he was going to do it until that happened.
Yeah, which I'm curious about as well. Like, was the doctor fully intending on before the secretive character shows up and and reads from Riversong's journal, who character ends up being Nardal, who then flips back his hood and says that he's fully licensed to kick the Doctor.
So they did jump around in time, so we'll jump around in time a little bit. We won't cover the whole Missy Vault stuff right now. We can get back to it later, because they do revisit it a number of times. But kind of back to the main story of this Extremis, it starts out where we see the Doctor, he's standing next to the vault, and then he gets this email that, well, we don't find out it's an email yet, but he gets this message in his glasses that is an email or something called Extremis. And that kind of kicks off the whole story. Sonic sunglasses.
How cool were those glasses this episode?
Well, they were very convenient, I'll say that.
Nice.
Because I have a major question about them and how they work. So the Doctor's blind, but his glasses have like a heads-up display. But how does he see the heads-up display if he's blind? Right?
Okay. Yeah. How silly is it that I never thought of that?
I was just looking, because it's like the whole idea, like you play any video game or anything that has kind of these heads-up displays. If you're a soldier, you know, if you're playing Halo, pretty much any first-person shooter game. You know, you have these maps and stuff that pop up on your head. And in this case, the Doctor's, he's standing in his lecture hall and he starts to see these different life forms that are appearing, that are coming into the hall, and it's telling him their height and, you know, their blood pressure, whatever it's telling him. And it's very much a layer of, you know, something that appears to be, based on the way that they're presenting, it appears to be something that's showing up on the back of the glasses that he can see. But he can't see at all. So then you'd have to jump to, okay, he's not seeing it the way we think he's seeing it. It's actually being projected directly into his brain, I guess?
Yeah. And I guess if I had to, like, take a leap there, I would say that it's some way it's getting routed into his brain there. They're Sonic, right? He's basically being a bat. It's echolocation at that point.
If that's the only way to interpret it, because otherwise it wouldn't make any sense. So yeah, those Sonic sunglasses are very convenient.
Very handy. Yeah, they even have record them. Functionality.
And I guess it is, you know, I'm being super nitpicky right now, but because of the way the Doctor carries himself, and he's not looking at characters sometimes correctly and stuff, so he's very much acting blind. But then he has this really cool heads-up display that tells him exactly where everybody is. So it's like, what are you? You know, are you actually blind, or do you have this thing that's making you not blind because you can't have both?
Yeah, and they on iTunes with the season pass for Doctor Who, they give you the episode and then they give you a look behind the scenes. And Capaldi mentioned that, like, that was his hardest thing that he's really has had to do, is pretend to be blind. Number one, like, the whole lack of eye contact thing, it messed him up. And then he also felt like he was messing with the other actors and actresses because he wasn't able to give them eye contact. And as he's saying this, as he's explaining it to it in the video, they're showing scenes where it most definitely looks like he's making eye contact. And then ones where you can definitely tell he's not making eye contact. It's hard, right?
That's like, interesting to hear him admit that, because I, as a viewer, actually had kind of thought, it doesn't seem like he's doing too well with this part. He's not playing blind very well. Like you were saying, he did make eye contact. There were a couple of times, especially right after he went blind.
Yeah.
In the first episode, he was like just looking at people, you know, like he could see them. And then this episode, he very much plays up the fact that he's blind, or as far as Nardal's got to like poke him and say, hey, you know, this thing right in front of you says this word, because he knew the Doctor couldn't read it. And so I was actually, you know, I didn't want to be too critical of Capaldi's performance because he does such a great job, but it did seem like this is something he's struggling with as an actor.
Yeah, and it's kind of curious, right? Because the Doctor is blind, but he's trying to act like he's not blind. And then Capaldi is not blind, trying to act like he's blind. So at some point, like, they seem to intersect where maybe he intentionally is trying to make eye contact as the Doctor without really knowing where the eyes are. And so that gives us that weird disconnect there. But it definitely was interesting to hear Capaldi say that it was difficult. And another aspect of that is he just didn't know what his blindness would look like in the end. Like, he said they're going to do special effects, but he had no idea what those special effects were going to be. Which also explains why he's probably not looking in the right places compared to what the Sonic sunglasses would end up having him look.
Side note, because we skipped over it, that the Time Lords have three brain stems.
I was so curious about that. Two hearts and three brain stems. Has that ever come up anywhere else?
If I had to guess, I'd say no. I mean, I'm not versed in the classic stuff, so maybe it has come up somewhere in classic. But I think I had seen somewhere that this was the first mention of it. So anyone that knows, if we're wrong, correct us. But yeah, but the only thing with that is it's kind of like, if you're thinking of just general biology, the brain stem kind of connects right to your spine, right? Kind of.
Yeah.
So why are there three if you only have one spine? But maybe the other two just kind of jut out to the side.
So I'm really scared to like Google this and find out that everything I thought about human biology or learned about human biology is wrong, and like everybody really has three brain stems. But
they wouldn't have said it that way if that was the case.
Most things that I'm seeing are mentioning that like this is a brand new thought or brand new fact about Time Lord physiology. So
it's a fun line for them to throw in, you know, because we don't know everything about their physiology. So I thought it was a fun line. It doesn't make a ton of sense that there'd be three brain stems, but it also doesn't make a ton of sense that there'd be two hearts. But a second heart, you know, is a little bit easier to stomach. It kind of, you're like, oh, okay, I can see you need more blood flow or whatever because of the enhanced function of the Time Lord's body or whatever. You know, explain it away. Three brain stems, what are they all connecting to? I don't know.
The two hearts. You need more blood to go to those brain stems, I guess. I don't know. Soon everything is going to make sense. They don't have appendix.
I need like a...
is incredible.
Like Star Wars does these really great, you know, books, these guides that they publish, you know, that kind of explain all the nerdy stuff that all the nerdy people like us care about. I haven't dug into that kind of stuff with Doctor Who yet. I don't even know if it exists. But that would be interesting if they had one that kind of like, oh, here's an X-ray of what a Time Lord looks like.
I'm just envisioning like those old school clear plastic overlays where like you slowly unbuild the body with different parts on each of the plastic overlays, and having like the three brain stems. With this being so new, though, I think we're probably going to have to wait a couple years before they have one with the updated three brain stems.
Did you see the Eighth Doctor movie yet?
I have not.
Okay, because there's something that happens in that movie that involves the doctor being in peril and being x-rayed and, you know, going to the hospital and stuff. And the fact that the human doctors had no idea how to deal with his physiology, like, actually is part of the reason why the Seventh Doctor dies. So nice. Interesting. And now I'm like thinking, oh, did they show an x-ray on that? I can't remember if they did or not, but it would be interesting to go back and look. See if you can pick out those brain stems. But so that was just a side tangent, just because we had forgotten to talk about when we were talking about the execution. But back to the lecture hall. We get a bunch of Catholics walked in. a cardinal or some cardinals, the Pope shows up.
This sounds like the start of a really bad joke.
Yeah, right.
We're in a lecture hall and a bunch of Catholics walk in. A cardinal, a pope, and...
Nardole.
And Nardole.
That was an interesting beginning to a storyline with the doctor getting pulled in by the Vatican. The whole thing with the Veritas and this document that people are reading and everybody's committing suicide. Very interesting stuff, but that stuff really isn't what mattered.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it was good window dressing. It got you interested in the episode. At least it sucked me in right away. Like, there's something about the church, there's something about ancient texts that always snags my attention. And so I was immediately pulled in. And just jumping back just a hair, the whole Sonic sunglasses, the whole like email or the message that he receives, and then we get the break for the intro, followed directly by the lecture hall, my mind immediately associated those two things, right? That he was in the lecture hall because of the message he received, and then the group of cardinals shows up, and priests along with the Pope. Like, my mind automatically associated those things, which then leads us into the rest of the episode, and really sets us up for the blind side at the end. But all of the information that they're sharing about the ancient texts, the early Christian sects, the translations, the lost translations, the retranslations, the mass suicides, I was sucked in immediately.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. They go to the Vatican. We find out about this like forbidden place within the Vatican where all the forbidden texts are at.
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. The doctor said language.
I know.
To that, which I was kind of like, is that like an inside joke in the UK? Because I didn't get it.
I have no idea. I rewatched that a couple times just to make sure that I was reading the subtitles correctly. And she really does say Harry Potter, and he says language, and I have no idea why.
Maybe because Harry Potter is a wizard and the witchcraft element, and then they're in the Vatican, like, and that those two things don't jive, maybe? I don't know. That was the closest I could get to it, where maybe that he thought, you know, oh, language, like these religious people are going to be offended that you're talking about witchcraft.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely take that leap, but I wonder if there's something that's missing. Like, does Harry Potter actually mean something entirely different when said in slang? I don't know.
Maybe not. Look it up in Urban Dictionary.
Yeah.
I dare you.
Three brain stems and Harry Potter. My Google search history is going to be awesome.
Yep. Oh, man. Yeah, so they're kind of in the bowels of the Vatican, and then they're going to this secret area. And then we find out that Pope Benedict the Ninth is somebody that the doctor has had interaction with and is actually was a female. Which it threw me off because I see they talked about it, and then they show a portrait of her, and I'm sitting there thinking, okay, you know, this must be something I'm just not aware of in history. I thought all popes were male, but maybe at some point there was a female pope. And so I Googled it, and Pope Benedict the Ninth was not a female. I was kind of confused. Is this like an alternate reality thing where they're just basically saying, hey, the world of Doctor Who is different than our world and some details of history are going to be different? Or is this a glitch in the alternate world that they created, you know, that these aliens created? I don't know. I was kind of wondering where I was supposed to be thinking. Where was your head at?
I have no idea. I just thought female pope, and like Nardole saying you dog.
I thought they were going to go there with the when you were suggesting the fact that the Pope was a Time Lord.
Yeah,
and I was kind of like, nah, they're not going to do that. But then this happened, and I was like, wait, maybe like Pope Benedict the Ninth was a female, you know, the Pope had regenerated into a female at one point and then it was kept hidden, or I don't know. Like, I was kind of, my mind started to go that way. But I don't think that's what they were hinting at. I don't know what they were hinting at, to be honest with you. I was kind of confused.
Yeah.
So that's a real person in history. Pope Benedict the Ninth is a real person.
Yeah. Yeah. And he wasn't a female, but there is some legends of a female Pope.
Right, Pope Joan.
But, yeah.
Is the yeah, right. So then I was reading about this because somebody posted a whole blog about it.
nice.
And they were thinking, oh, they were kind of the belief that although Doctor Who is set in our world, some historical elements in the Doctor Who world are different than our history. In that in the Doctor Who world, Pope Benedict the Ninth was a woman, and that the doctor had met her. So I was like, okay, but I just had never seen Doctor Who in that way. I had always seen the history that they represented as being our history and not some alternate universe history. So now I'm kind of like, I don't know if I like that idea that it's an alternate universe history.
You didn't think
we were going to talk about this that much, did you?
You weren't prepared
for this conversation.
I didn't think we were going to focus on the female Pope. I just thought it was funny that there was a... I honestly, like, just chuckled at that moment of like, haha, female Pope. And that he was, I'm trying to think of what words he says. What did she charm him with?
Yeah, he did use some word, I don't know what that word means, so I probably should have Googled that too.
Yeah.
But no, I don't remember.
I thought it was a clever thing that they threw in there. Like, in my mind, Doctor Who has this way of just twisting history in certain points and either taking something, like, I mean, case in point, we have Robin Hood thrown in there. And we were always curious, like, does that mean that they view Robin Hood as being real, or does he now work in fiction, and what happens there? This was just another one of those instances where it was like, okay, it's just tossed out there, and I just chuckled and enjoyed it and then moved on.
See, for me, the implications of it are deeper. Like, I like rules. I like to know how the rules work in the universe, like, even if it's a fictional universe. And so for me, this opens up a door that I'd never had thought about, you know, whenever in the past they've included historical figures, they've always kept it accurate to our history. You know, maybe the Doctor influenced something, or the Doctor comes in and changes something, but the initial meeting of a character, I don't know, maybe not, maybe I'm wrong and there's just an instance I'm not thinking of, but it does seem like this could open the door for, oh, well, this is different in the Doctor Who version of history, so it gives them a little bit more of a pass. I'm thinking way too much into it, I'm sure. But and the other thing too is it's happening in an alternate universe anyways, because it's some made up universe that these aliens created. So that alone could be the explanation.
And it's Moffat, and Moffat is done in seven episodes. So it's up to Chibnall how he wants to move forward with it, right?
Yep, it's another one of those the Doctor's got tea moments, and you just gotta be like, yeah, okay, whatever. Don't think too much about it. I just thought it was interesting. The what else here?
They wander into the Hereticum. They have the moment of the awkward light showing up, and the Doctor having absolutely no idea what was there.
That happened a couple times in the episode where the Doctor, there's like a few specific instances where the Doctor's blindness is very obvious. And that's another thing too with this whole blind thing. Come on, Doctor, just tell people you're blind. It's so obvious. Especially when he has the sunglasses on, it just makes him look more blind.
But like, when Nardal calls him an idiot and the Doctor just says, everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that. Everybody also knows you're blind. Like, how does Bill not know?
Obviously at this point? Not. Bill has no idea, right? And I think that's the thing. Like when the Cardinal lays down the paper and he says, we have the main title, and he like slides it across the table, and the Doctor's like, oh, what's the word? And he just kind of sits there, and like no one else notices anything is wrong at that point. And then Nardal's like, oh, I see. Says Veritas.
Yeah, Nardal did that a couple of times. There's a light coming around the corner about 6 feet ahead of us, or whatever he says. And it's just, it's one of those things where it's not making me like Bill anymore. As much as I'm trying to like her, there's more and more reasons for me not to like her. I'm like, come on, Bill. Like, you should have noticed this by now. Clara would have been like, Doctor, come on, are you kidding me? Take off the sunglasses. You know?
I have to say, though, that her character was much, much stronger in this episode than I feel like any episode since Smile.
Maybe. She didn't really have much to do. I mean, she's running around with Nardal in that one part. But beyond that, there's not a lot that she does. The Doctor just kind of dismisses her. Like, kind of, you're in my way. I want to do this on my own.
Yeah, but she didn't melt like a snowball in July, right? Like, no. when someone died, she didn't just melt. When she saw bombs under a table, she didn't fall apart. Like, she started to kind of fray at the end, but I think I might have started to fray at the end as well.
If your digital self started disappearing.
Yeah, or if I just came from a situation where everybody started saying the exact same numbers I was saying, like that would cause some concern.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't know. She didn't stand out to me in this episode as being any better than she's been previously in the season. I'm still very much on the fence about her as a companion. I know I've gotten some flack for that with some people, you know, on our Facebook page or what on Twitter or whatever, that I'm being too hard on her. But just I'm just honest opinion. She's just not my favorite. She's not right now. If I'm just going purely off modern companions, she's dead last.
Ouch.
You know,
ouch.
There's still time with her, but there's not a lot more time. So I just think she's going to be kind of a forgetful companion unless some major things happen pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. It seems like things are going to be picking up here moving forward.
Yeah, it does. It definitely seems like they were saving some of this stuff. You know, we're getting a pretty big storyline has been introduced.
Yeah. Fairly large. Cool. So like there's the scene in the Hereticum. They go to the cage. There's a translator. He takes off. Doctor sits down, plugs in his headphones, kind of, and Bill and Nardole wander off by themselves, which I have to say, like, Nardole, again, super fun anytime he's in the scene. That's, I like his character. His character is awesome.
Yeah, there was a couple of funny moments here. I loved the part where the doctor is like, they're talking about like how everybody had killed themselves. And so the guy, they see the guy, the guy's got the gun, the guy runs off. And then they're like, well, everybody killed himself. And they're like, well, one person didn't. And then like and you hear the gunshot like, right after she says it, right after Bill says that. And then the doctor's like, oh, you know, go find him. And the doctor can see that the guy's already dead, you know, but he still is like, go check on him, you know, go see if he's okay. I thought that was all very funny, but I thought the timing of the gunshot right after they're like, yeah, there's still one that didn't kill himself. Bang. Like that was very good comedic timing.
And even like the exchange afterwards, because Nardole's like, you're trying to get rid of us. And the doctors said, why would you think that? And he said, because you just told us to chase him through the dark and he has a gun. like it doesn't make much sense. And the doctor says, I thought of that. Nardole, stand in front of Bill. And like there were just those different moments. Again, like the Cardinal and the doctor are going back and forth about what did he say? The doctor says, truth in the heart of blasphemy. And the Cardinal says, and death in the heart of truth. And Nardole replies, you'd just be like champs at writing Christmas crackers. So like just those one liners that Nardole throws out. But definitely the highlight for me was when he's with Bill by himself and he tells Bill, get behind me. Bill's like, no, moves forward. He says, Bill, Miss Potts, get behind me. And then he takes off his glasses. And just the way that he goes about it, and then he like pops the glasses back on and says something really goofy and then just starts walking. Like, Matt Lucas is incredible.
That was a very funny exchange. You could tell they're at odds because he wants to, you know, follow the doctor's orders, but he also wants to protect her. But she's not the type of person that feels like she needs protection. You know, so she's like, I'm not standing behind you. You know, I can walk neck, you know, side by side with you. And he just kind of, you know, takes his glasses off, looks at her, tries to put her in her place. But you can tell she still doesn't necessarily take him seriously. But she's just like, okay, you care enough about this. I'm going to listen to you. And then she's like, oh, you're kind of a secret badass, aren't you?
Yes.
I forget what he said. Something like, it ain't no secret doll Big or something. Doll. Baby doll. Yeah.
Yes.
And then
ain't
he like,
no secret baby doll.
And then he's like, ah. You know, yes. He gets scared right after that. So that entire exchange was very good.
Yeah, he plays that character. Even in the opening scene where he's reading from the journal and then he pops his hood off and he's like, and your missus wouldn't be too fond of it either, or whatever he says at that moment. Like it just seems like he can switch so effortlessly between just these demeanors and attitudes. He's aces.
So kind of jumping back again, because we didn't really talk about this interaction either, I have a couple things here. One, I was wondering if you noticed something. So I'm going to jump back to when Bill brings her friend Penny. Is that the right
Penny.
Name? Penny.
Yep.
Back to her house. And she's having an interaction with her at the table. They're talking. And then did you notice in this scene, I noticed it first, and then I noticed it again later on in the episode, but did you notice like strange flashes of blue light?
No.
Okay. Because I was watching through the first time and they're talking, and whenever the camera would kind of look at Bill, a couple different times it would look at her, there would be this weird, like, blue flash of light kind of on the side of her face, and it would be very instantaneous. And I was like, that's kind of weird. Like, is my TV doing something weird, or is that just some kind of weird effect that they're, just doing, almost kind of like the idea of a lens flare? And so it didn't really bother me too much. But then later on in the episode, after they reveal that they're living in an alternate reality, then you see it more prominently. And I was almost wondering if that was something that they had dropped in kind of at the beginning to kind of show you that something was off.
That would be I didn't notice it. It makes sense, and I really wish I would have noticed it because that is brilliant.
Yeah, it was kind of cool because
To
like,
have that foreshadow.
because I was thinking in my head something was off, but I thought it was just something, okay, this is just a weird, decision by the director, in lighting. But I knew something wasn't quite right. And then when they reveal that they're living in this world that's not quite right, I was like, wow, that was really smart way to show that very, subtly. So maybe do a rewatch and see. Maybe I'm just completely crazy, but I swear there's different moments that there's like a there's not only this light that kind of flashes against her face, but also there'd be moments where a character would move and you'd almost see a little bit of a blur behind them. So something to look out for on a rewatch.
I'm super curious about that. Like I've watched twice now. I haven't picked up on that, but now I'm wanting to watch more than that. And this episode, I feel like lends itself to that. This was just a good episode.
This wasn't an episode that you might want to rewatch. This was an episode you had to rewatch, I
Yeah, no,
think.
definitely.
There was enough going on, enough that wasn't very clear. There was some kind of jumping back and forth in time, and you're kind of thinking, okay, when did this happen in relation to that? And so a rewatch was completely necessary for me to get my head completely wrapped around what was going on. I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of what happened. There may be some questions still, but I thought it definitely took a second watching.
It reminded me, and I hate making this comparison, just because of the pedestal that this episode is on, when it comes to New Who, but like Blink with the Weeping Angels, where it is timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. Like you watch it the first time and you feel like you understand what's taking place. You feel like you get the stream that things are going in, but then you get to the end and it's like, oh dang, that rips my heart out. And I didn't quite follow the timeline of what was taking place. This kind of feels like that same thing where they take these subtle breaks in timeline and you find yourself in different positions, and they purposely mislead you at times so that at the end there is this big reveal. And so it's fun to go back and rewatch to pick up on all those nuances of where they purposely misled you, or all the things that they all the cookie crumbs they dropped to lead you the right direction that you just didn't pick up on the first time.
So the other question I had was, who is this lady that Bill lives with? Is that her aunt or something?
I thought it was her foster mom the first episode, but now I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I just didn't know if it was something that they had revealed in the first episode and I just wasn't remembering, but I'm like, who is this mean lady?
I think the first episode she is her foster mom because she calls the doctor her foster teacher or something like that.
Okay. That would make sense, although I guess she would be old enough not to have a foster mom. I don't know. That's how it is in the US, but I guess once you turn 18, maybe she just decided to stay living with her even though she didn't have to. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's a place to come back to, right? She hasn't had the best of luck of finding a new place to live.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah, 'cause she is looking for a place, so it could just be. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Knock, knock.
Yeah, so that was just me remembering that stuff and jumping backwards, but we could move on with the story. We haven't talked about the aliens yet directly. But we have this idea of what they're calling the Monks, although Stephen Moffat says that's not actually the name of the alien species. That's just what they're being called in the production, or you know, even how they're being referred to in the different things that I've read. But yeah, so this alien, we had talked about how the hand at least looked similar to the thing that the Doctor was running from in the maze that he was in.
Yeah, we mentioned that last episode, that the hand looks very similar, especially when it's like just by itself and coming through a wall to grab a cardinal. It looks very much like the hand that chased him through the maze towards the end of Series 9.
The design of these aliens is awesome.
Yeah,
I thought they looked great. Some of the best like alien bad guy, you know, makeup work that we've seen in Doctor Who. You know, Doctor Who is sometimes doesn't have the greatest examples of like unique design, you know, and they fall back a lot on the classic series, and they're reproducing, you know, things like the Daleks and the Cybermen. But when they come up with a new alien, you know, a new one that we've never seen before, this is a really good example of what I would like to see more of from different creatures that they're creating. I loved how they looked. They almost looked like unwrapped mummies.
Yep.
But I loved that when they spoke, their mouths didn't really move that much.
Yeah.
They kind of just moved a little bit, but then you could hear the entire phrase or sentence that was coming out of the mouth. Really creepy voices. I thought they nailed it.
Yeah, I do too. I would put it right up there with like the silence. The silence to me, I feel like they were underused. I feel like they weren't really as scary as what they ought to be. But as far as a new villain or monster or alien, whatever you want to call it, and New Who, like these are very well done. Like they inspire fear, even the way that they use them. Like they didn't really do much. They kind of showed up when the Doctor regained his sight and started to lose it again. And then they disappeared, and then they came back at the end. They didn't really do all that much, but just their presence, none of the characters knew that they were there. But as a viewer, their presence and always wondering where they were going to come out of or what they were going to do. Yeah, I thought really well done. I'm curious to see how they're used in the next coming episodes, though. But for these, in the environment that they were in here, the creepy library, really well done.
Right. And so they're, you know, a lot about them is still a mystery. We know that they're an alien species that has copied the Earth digitally and projected it so they can practice on how to defeat the Earth.
Yeah.
Which is kind of
good.
That's kind of a cool idea.
It's a real-time strategy game for them.
Yeah, they basically turned the Earth into a video game. They've been practicing for a long time, it seems. We don't know exactly how long, but we know that the Doctor has been killed multiple times by them, or at least that's what they tell the Doctor. Maybe they're just trying to intimidate him. But, yeah, so we get kind of the projection. So the portal things that are showing up on the walls turn out to be these portals into this central kind of thing that projects out, and they can travel from one place to another. It's a lot of it, the detail of like how and why isn't really explained, but you get the overall picture that they have created this, you know, alternate reality that isn't real.
Yeah, and I feel like some of the why will be explained a little bit more in the next episode. It looks like the Doctor has a little bit more of a dialogue with them at that point. But at least in the iteration that they have now, they are somewhat intimidating once you get to the end of it and you realize that they're essentially practicing domination, and they do so in such a way that is really creepy when it comes right down to it, where all of these individuals don't realize that they aren't really real individuals. But then are they really real individuals? Like, what is the definition of being real?
And Nardole and Bill are jumping through these portals, and we get them visiting. So they go to the Pentagon. Then they go to this other place, which is
CERN.
Right, which is the place that does particle development or something like that, particle something testing. But they are the ones that got the email from the guy that translated that Veritas into a computer and emailed it. So they have decided that because they now know that none of them are real, that they are going to also commit suicide like everybody else, by blowing themselves up.
Yes.
So my question with this, because it made sense to me the first time I watched it, and the more I thought about it, it didn't make a lot of sense to me, is why is everybody killing themselves when they find out about the Veritas? So the Veritas is more than just them finding out that they're not real, right? There's more to
Yeah.
it. There's something about like an impending doom, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's kind of how I understood it. And I had a similar question, and like one thing that I thought of it, because the doctor makes a statement like those that are smart enough to realize of what's going on, they delete themselves from the game. And Nardal chalking it up to if Mario found out and he was just sick of dying, he would just remove himself from the game. And so like not necessarily in a way, you're screwing up the simulation if every key component of the game just removes itself from the simulation. You won't get accurate data, right? You're messing up the alien's ability to get accurate counts of what would happen if the simulation were to play out, which I think might also be why the aliens, which is still not quite explained, why they're trying to steal Veritas. Right? They don't want the doctor to have Veritas. They don't want this information to get out there because it's messing with their simulation.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought it was weird that every single person that read it decided, oh, okay, I'm not real. I'm just going to kill myself. You would think that there would be a couple people that would be like, oh, this is interesting. Let me try to figure it out more than just, oh, let me kill myself.
Right. Let's see if I can fly today.
Like, I don't think Nardole or Bill would have killed themselves, but maybe that's why they both disappeared. Because once
Yeah,
they
that's.
realized what was going on, then the powers that be were like, oh, these two people know too much. Let's take them out of the game. I don't know. It seemed odd to me that everybody was killing themselves. I never had a good explanation as to why everyone was committing suicide.
Yeah, there definitely feels like there's a few loose ends. And if we sit here and we like analyze those loose ends, we'll probably find more and more things about the episode to be less satisfied with, which is like typical Moffat fare, right? That he writes really good stories for the most part when you take a look at it from like a 50,000 foot view. But the closer you zoom in, the more you realize that there's just all these little things that when looked at by themselves make very little sense. But when everything is just like tossed at you at once in a 45-minute episode, you can't help but just be overwhelmed by the intricacies and just the overall story that he's weaving.
We get kind of the resolution of the story. The doctor is, it's revealed to him, I guess, what's going on more than he figures it out, but he realizes that he's not real either. The doctor's not real, or at least he's not the real version of himself here. So he's able to transfer through an email to his real self the message that we saw at the very beginning of the episode. That
Yes.
kind of kicks off all this stuff. The timeline of it all, this is where it gets a little weird for me, and I'm kind of trying to understand how it all works, because the how so the virtual version of the doctor had all the same memories of the real doctor. So whatever happened with Missy and the vault and all that stuff, although it did happen in the real world, right? We're not meant
Yeah.
to believe any of that is fake.
Right.
The virtual doctor remembers it.
Right.
So yeah, I guess the timing of like the simulation is kind of what comes into question for me. Like, when did this simulation start? And how, like, so everything that we've seen up to this point did actually happen, but in this alternate reality, when did it start? I don't know.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, Missy has already taken place. The doctor is already blind, and Yeah, that's pretty much where that stopping point is, right? It's sometime after Chasm Forge that this simulation of the Doctor takes place. And with the timeline, Missy was a very long time ago. We have the Doctor pressing his hand up against the vault, still blind, talking to Missy, sits down, gets the message, and then all of that happens. For some reason, I'm thinking like a simulation could probably happen very quickly, right? Like the simulation doesn't necessarily have to be real time, especially if they've killed the Doctor multiple times. So maybe it's more of a sped up simulation at that point, and we just get to experience it in real time. But
Yeah, that, I guess that makes sense if, maybe they've been doing this for thousands of years, but this specific simulation hasn't just started after Chasm Forge. So that's why we're, this version of the Doctor has the memories of the real Doctor because when they started him out, he gained those memories. I guess the science behind it is beyond us as humans to understand, and that's probably why I don't get it. Because the ability to literally copy an entire world and all of the events that happened in the past to have every person that's put into your simulation remember the real events and the memories of the real people, that's some crazy science that these people have, this power that these aliens that they're going to have to deal with have. So it's kind of intimidating what they can do.
And that's why they're gonna win.
That's why the aliens are going to win?
Exactly.
Oh, okay. That's why the doctor needs Missy's help. That's why, I guess, he's realizing he's up against something that he is going to have a tough time defeating.
Yeah, I'm really curious just to see how that plays out. And like you mentioned, is Missy really in the vault? We're kind of led to believe that she's in the vault, but really, he took the oath. So the oath that he took was to watch Missy's body for 1,000 years. So it could be Missy's body in the vault still, or could be John Sim, right? He has seen Missy recently, though. And he did refer to her as Missy, or he did go into the vault recently, and he did refer to her as Missy. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, that's definitely what they're indicating, that Missy's in the vault. But that's kind of what we were talking about at the beginning of the episode, is that really who's in there? I do think that's who's in there. Is that the form she's going to take when they open the door? That's what I'm wondering about. I'm kind of still wondering if we do see John Sim as kind of the big surprise, where they're telling us, hey, Missy's in the vault. He put her in there. It's part of his oath. And then he goes and opens the door, and instead of Missy waiting for him in there, it's John Sim. She has regenerated into, which I think would be a cool twist, and I wish they were able to keep it a secret. I wish that they hadn't already revealed that he's coming, because that would have been an amazing twist, for us to have no idea that this actor's coming back. They open the door of the vault, and there sits John Sim, and we're like, oh my gosh. Like, our minds would have just been completely blown.
Yeah.
Like, they gave up that, I guess, just to get us excited about the actor coming back.
So what we've been given is that Missy, or at least the Master, is in 3 episodes, right? The 3 episode arc that we have. So what happens if in the process of helping the Doctor, Missy dies, regenerates into John Sim, and we still have that out of order?
Yeah, either way, I think that would be a cool way to go about it. Either it happens in the vault or it happens after or whatever. I think that would be a cool twist that even though we know Sim is coming, we wouldn't necessarily know that.
Yeah,
So
I'm
that.
really curious now to go through some of the things that have been published about Missy being in the 3 episode arc and see if they refer to it as Missy being in the 3 episode arc or if they mention the Master is going to be in the 3 episode arc.
Right. That kind of covers most of the episode. I like the idea of a fatality index. The guy with the wristwatch thing.
Do you just get the sense that he just sits and watches Mortal Kombat the entire time?
I don't know. Fatality.
Fatality.
No, I just thought it was cool, like a cool idea that there's this group that, handles these executions and they have this index of every person and, anything that has to do with death. And it was kind of a cool moment for the doctor at the end, where the doctor's like, you know, look me up, you know, kind of thing. And we've seen the doctor do that before, but it was a cool moment where they're all kind of like, he's like, oh, you have a very impressive list of people that you've killed, you know. And he kind of gets freaked out and he's like, but you're unarmed. You're unarmed, right? And the doctor's like, always. He's like, but you stand alone, usually, or sometimes. Usually. Yeah. you know, these cool little comebacks where the doctor's just so confident, and I love it when the doctor does that. And then the guy just kind of slowly, you know, runs away because he realizes he shouldn't be messing with this guy. So, good moment.
Yeah, that was a great moment. And then that leads us into Missy being in the cage, the vault.
Yep, Missy's in the vault. And we now know that there was this alternate reality. You think the alternate reality is going to play a part anymore? Or is that done? Because we know Nardole was fake and Bill was fake, but there's real versions of both of them. It's not like either of them are gone.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm wondering if this might play out a little bit more. There's the last episode of this arc has a really interesting synopsis. It came out this past week, and reading that synopsis apart from the first episode, it seemed like a standalone episode that was a little bit hard to understand. But now that we've watched the first episode, we have the synopsis or the trailer for the second episode. And with this third synopsis, I'm really curious what's going to end up happening. There's so many things that are just, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Overall, though, I feel like things might start picking up. I feel like we might start making some headway in this series finally again.
Yeah, I didn't know this was a three-parter until I was reading some stuff about this episode specifically, and I was like, oh, okay, this is a three-parter. I like where this first episode's going. I think these villains that they're introducing are very interesting. The doctor talked about what he had read in the Veritas and that there was a demon that was wanting to take over the world. So yeah. That's kind of an interesting, you know, thing or use a term demon, as opposed to alien species or something like that. So, yeah, I think they're definitely opening up the door for a potentially really cool storyline. And Moffat so far has been the only one that's written something I like this season. So,
yeah, it's crazy. Overall, did you enjoy Moffat's writing? The loose ends, the timey-wimey, like, did you enjoy all of that?
Yeah, I thought the episode as a whole I really enjoyed. I thought it was definitely a high note so far for this season. And there was nothing in it, although I've been kind of, you know, picking out little things that didn't necessarily make sense to me. That's fine, because Doctor Who, that happens. You know, that happens a ton. There's still completely unanswered questions from, like, the 11th Doctor's run that I'm still frustrated about. Yeah, there was nothing in it that bothered me enough that I'd be like, oh, that really ruined the episode for me. Overall, I actually really enjoyed this episode. Now, that it does kind of leave us on a bit of a cliffhanger. And we have said in the past where we get these two or three parters where the first episode's kind of weak and then the next episode makes up for it. This is actually starting out as a first episode as being very strong.
Yeah.
So that actually has my hopes pretty high for where they're going with it. I haven't looked at the synopsis that you were just talking about. I know the next episode, The Pyramid at the End of the World, we do have promo pics for that. So I'm popping that open right now to see if there's anything of note. It looks like we definitely get the monks, I guess, back. They're not going away.
Yeah, no, they're here for a couple more.
Some scientists. Looks like we got military looking people.
One of the scientists dies.
One of the scientists dies?
Not to throw a spoiler out there, but in one of the promo pics, you have the one scientist looking with a look of surprise at a scientist laying on the floor.
So definitely a different setting. You know, we're going from Vatican and religious stuff and awesome hidden libraries to, like, you know, some sort of a military setting with military vehicles, lots of military uniforms. Looks kind of like a hot desert type climate.
in a pyramid that wasn't there the day before.
Yes. So, all right. Cool. Cool promo picks. And then we also got a trailer. So I just watched it. Life on Earth will cease by humanity's own hand.
Yep. And the doctor admits he's blind.
So, yeah. So now the doctor has finally told Bill that he's blind, which is interesting. And the pyramid apparently has something to do with the monk people. Like, it's like maybe they are the ones that put it there.
Yeah. If you look in the background of the main promo pic, at the top of the pyramid, there's this huge beam of light shooting into the sky.
All right.
So it's communicating. That's what all the pyramids are, right? They're from aliens.
Right, right. So, yeah, next episode looks interesting. Continuation of what we saw here. And that's it. I have nothing more to say.
No, good episode. I was surprised to see some mixed reviews out there after it showed. People really bumming on the Moffat way of writing an episode and really wanting one concise, closed up story at the end of it. Another thing from the look behind the scenes that I thought was interesting is Bill mentioned, or Pearl mentioned, that these episodes are different for her just because she's used to having the stories closed up. So it was interesting filming, not knowing where the story was going. But yeah, over the next 2 weeks, we'll finally get to see where the story goes and enjoy a little bit more long of a storyline.
So this would be episode 7 and 8.
Yeah, episode 7 and 8, and then we just have 4 more after that.
Wow.
It's almost over already. We just got started. We don't have a huge, 4-week break in between our series.
Yeah, that's it's kind of sad to think that it's almost over, and then we have to wait until Christmas. So, oh well.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, I think for now, we are good to wrap this episode of Bad Wolf Radio up.
Sounds good.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Bad Wolf Radio. If you enjoy listening to our podcast and you have not left us a review yet on iTunes, we'd love for you to go over to iTunes, leave us a nice 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook. We are Bad Wolf Radio. You can also follow our Facebook group or join our Facebook group if you would like. And you can just search for us, Bad Wolf Podcast, on Facebook, and request to join our group. We'll probably say yes. Instagram at Bad Wolf Radio. I missed all your Instagram stuff last time, Adam, because I hadn't watched the episode yet and I didn't want to be spoiled. So I missed that, but follow us on Instagram at Bad Wolf Radio, and you can send us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com, and you can always find us on the Geek Tyrant or Pod Tyrant Network at Geek Tyrant, or on our website, www.badwolfpodcast.com. And until next time,
later.